A miniature bit of tremendous power is the engine of our era, the computer microchip. Now, imagine that you're looking at part of a computer circuit through a microscope. There's a maze of what looks like tiny wires and pipes, etched on an area no wider than a human hair. You adjust the microscope, and then you notice something else. There in the corner is the face of a baby, or a full-color hummingbird. Computer engineers aren't supposed to cut pictures onto chips. They do it secretly. They slip the tiny art into mass production and hope that someone, someday, will find it. Today we are talking about how small things fire the imagination. We mean small versions of big things, like dollhouses, and art that was conceived originally at a smaller scale, like the delightful plays written by my guest, David Ives. The New York Times has called David Ives the maestro of the short form. He is probably best known for his one-act comedies, including All in the Timing and Mere Mortals. David Ives, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you very much.
What is your attraction to working at the small scale of one acts and so on?
Well, I think it's because I used to write very large, ponderous, pretentious, magnificent existential plays that weren't very good. And at some point I realized that that was not the way I actually thought. And sometime in the mid-80s, I just started writing. One night I sat down with an idea I'd had for years and years, which was the age-old proverb that three monkeys sitting at three typewriters into infinity will at some point produce Hamlet. And so I started wondering what those monkeys would talk about while they were sitting at the typewriter. So I set them down and wrote a play called Words, 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 which was done to a good deal of notice. And somehow I was on my way, and I was just thinking small for a very long time and produced, I think, 28 or 29 of those little plays.
We have a little bit of one of your little works that we would like to play. Can you tell us what we're going to hear?
This is a monologue that I wrote called A Singular Kind of Guy, which is about, which is a man in a bar on a Saturday night wearing a sharp suit and some good shoes. And he has a very profound secret that he tells to the person that he's talking to.
I know what you're thinking. You're looking at me and you're saying to yourself, average guy, normal human being, nothing out of the ordinary. Well, that's what I thought too for lots of years, and boy, was I wrong. Now I look back, I think I always really knew the truth about myself underneath. It's like sometimes I'd look in the mirror in the morning, and I'd get this weird feeling like what I was looking at was not what I really was looking at. Or else I'd be standing in a crowd of people at a party, and suddenly I'd get this idea like I was standing in a huge empty space and there wasn't anybody around me for miles. Episodes of vastation, if you know that beautiful word. And then one day I had a, I don't know what you'd call it, a mystical experience. I was walking down Lex over in the 30s when I go by this office supply shop, just a crummy little place. But I turn, and I look, and I see an Olivetti Model 250 portable electric typewriter. Are you familiar with that particular model? Have you ever seen the old Olivetti 250? Well, let me tell you, it is sublime. The lines, the shape, the slant of the keyboard, it's all there. It's a thing of beauty. Anyway, I'm standing there looking at this thing, and it's like I recognize it from someplace. It's like I'm looking at family somehow, like I'm seeing some long-lost older brother for the first time, and suddenly I realize that's me right there. That thing in the window is exactly what I feel like on the inside. Same lines, same shape, same aesthetic. And what I realized was, I am a typewriter. No, really, a typewriter. All those years I thought I was a human being on the inside, I was really a portable Olivetti 250 with automatic correctability. And you know what? I can't even type. Needless to say, this revelation came as a shock. But all of a sudden, it's clear to me how come I always got off on big words like vastation, or phenomenological, or subcutaneous. Words are what a typewriter's all about. Right? problem is, it can be a lonely thing being a typewriter in a world of human beings. And now, here I am being replaced every day by word processors. Who needs a typewriter anymore? Here I finally figure out what I really am. I'm an antique already. Plus, there's my love life, which is problematical, to say the least. The difficulties involved in a typewriter finding a suitable partner in this town are fairly prodigious, as you can imagine. At least now I know how come I always loved not just sex, sex is anywhere, but touch, being touched, and touching. Being touched is part of the nature and purpose of typewriters. That's how we express ourselves and the human person along with us. Hands on the keyboard and the right touch, fire away. Yeah, women's hands. They're practically the first thing I notice. Nice set of shapely fingers, good manicure, no hangnails, soft skin. I'm not a finger fetishist or anything, you understand. It's just, you've got a pretty nice pair of hands yourself there. That's what I noticed. That's how come I stepped over here to talk to you. I know this all sounds pretty loony, but you know, I never told anybody this before. Somehow I just felt like I could trust you. And what? Beg your pardon? I don't understand. You're not really a girl? Sure you're a girl. You're a beautiful girl, so... You're what? You're actually a sheet of paper? 10-pound bond? Ivory tinted? Pure cotton fiber? Glad to meet you.
Well, that was lovely.
Oh, thank you.
And that represents how much of that play?
That is an entire play. That is one of the few monologues I've actually written as a self-standing piece. But it's a full love story, sort of in 3 minutes.
What can't you do when you're working at this very compressed, miniaturized scale?
Well, there's no time for realistic development, and so you, because you're stripped down to sort of essentials, you have to just be as concise as you possibly can. It is a form that lends itself to either poetry or philosophy. My favorite Beckett play is a play called Breath, which is it is literally this: the curtain comes up. The lights shine on a stage filled with rubbish for about 5 seconds. You hear a breath for about 10 seconds, and then the lights go down and the curtain falls, and that is the entire play. And there's something just so extraordinarily stark and yet so extraordinarily rich about that. And so it's that richness that I think short form allows you to explore without trying the patience of your audience, especially since most plays that I go to seem twice as long as they should.
Most things that one goes to. The word miniature has a set of connotations that aren't necessarily positive. How do you regard the miniature as a way to make art of various kinds?
Well, I think that miniatures are part of a sort of ancient argument in art, I guess sort of between the classical and the romantic in a funny way. I think it's always been odd to me that in Western poetry there is Homer, and immediately thereafter there is Sappho, who wrote lyrics, brief lyrics, some of which only survive in one line or two lines, whereas Homer is the expansive sort of novelistic author who is not lyrical but epic. And I think that we have that same argument in American poetry between the sort of cataloging, all-inclusive, encyclopedic yowl of Whitman to the sort of absolutely gem-like little pieces by Dickinson.
And in fiction. I mean, Thomas Wolfe and Fitzgerald, The Great Gatsby, is a tiny book, actually.
miniatures in just about any art form to me are give you that feeling like you've just had your picture taken and the flashbulb has popped and you have had some moment of extraordinary electric feeling, and for just for that 1 second you feel absolutely alive. I think that's what the really great miniatures do.